Welcome to the Non-Dual Performer podcast. My name is Sam Katadia, and we're going to be discussing performance in all walks of life. And we hope that this podcast will develop your curiosity and your insight around what it means to perform well.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Non-Dual Performer. So, Sam, what are we going to be talking about today?
Be really good to talk about how somebody starts a non-dual exploration and what does that even mean? Obviously, there are very few words really to describe it. Non-duality is probably the best we've got to work with. And we have to always start with experience and what is happening now. Can't really go anywhere else other than that, because we're moving into belief systems, ideas, conditioning from years and years of being brought up in a certain way. And a non-dual exploration must start with a sense of curiosity to what is happening now, what is unfolding now. And it's anchored in our direct experience. So those who are listening, just bring your attention now to your immediate experience. Look at what you're perceiving, hearing, feeling, and move in the direction of that direct experience. Now, I'm not pointing towards concepts, ideas and beliefs, direct raw experience. And I'll give you an example of that. So I'm sitting on a sofa here next to Jamie. Sofa as a concept has never been experienced. It's an overlay of direct experience within the belief realm. So without going too matrixy and zeros and ones too soon, I think that the take home in answer to where you start with a non-dual exploration, it has to start with one, an element of curiosity, and two, it has to be grounded in your immediate experience. What are you experiencing right now? That is the start of all non-dual explorations. Never should a non-dual exploration be to get something or to find an ideal state or a feeling. It's actually walking back from that. It's starting to kind of let go of where we think our well-being is.
Yeah, I totally resonate with that. And on my own non-dual journey, one of the things that really helped was to not get too attached to the changing states. And because often what leads someone to become curious is experiencing some kind of event that they haven't experienced before. Like maybe there's some kind of NDE or a near-death experience or something like that, which triggers the search, or they often, many people that I've met have had those experiences through taking different substances. But again, this relates to a specific state. So I think it'd be really great to, you know, highlight that a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of people who become curious about non-duality or the exploration of the true self and oneness, for a better word, often it's an event that triggers, like you said, Jamie, that curiosity. It awakens something, that things that we believe aren't what they seem. So it could be the breakup of a relationship, it could be losing stuff that we felt we had a vested identity built into. And when we lose those crutches, we open ourselves up to deep insight. So again, trauma can also have that impact, because it can really open you up to see direct experience and actually what reality is actually made of, rather than what we believe it's made of. And as we go through life, it's so easy to get sucked back into thinking certain objects or things are where our well-being lies. So even after that event where we kind of have a collapse of everything that we believed in, it's so quick for us to then pin our well-being on something new. So let me explain that. So when we lose our vested interest in certain experiences, whether it's marriage, whether it's losing our job, whether it's getting ill, losing a loved one, it's so easy when we get that moment of complete exposure to truth that very quickly our mind, our limitations of the mind, cotton on to a new object. So that new object could be nature. That new object could be a cult. That object could be exercise. It could be a whole range of things. So what's really important, again, coming back to the theme of this podcast, when we're starting a non-dual exploration, we must let go of and discount anything that we think has somehow shown us the way, because that is kind of the beginning of the end of your non-dual exploration. It's just in another object. So objects can be, there are two main types of object. One is your gross object. It could be a nice house. It could be having a wonderful relationship. It could be exercise. That's an actual
sex.
Sex, yeah. Sex is one of the most powerful.
It's a corker.
Yeah, indeed. And that also can appear as some kind of savior, especially when we feel liberated. But the liberation is not something that can be attributed to any kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the subtle objects are things like calmness or excitement or anxiety, ones that we want to get away from.
A state of no thought.
Now see, that's an interesting one, because people might say, well, I'm exploring non-duality because I want to get to a state of no thought. Well, you cannot get to a state of no thought, because we are in a limited mind. So, you know, I like the Dzogchen example of, if the reflection in the mirror can never really know that it's on a mirror. It can't know, it's naturally a part of the mirror, an aspect of the mirror, but it can never know itself as the mirror. Now, the mirror is a metaphor for consciousness, awareness, that eternal space that holds absolutely everything. We are an aspect of consciousness, awareness, God, call it whatever you want, but we can never know of that eternal vastness, because the mirror can only really know itself. The reflection is just an agency, an element, or a fractal of that of that mirror. So when people say, I'm exploring non-duality because I want to get to a place of no thought, then they're ultimately in a very subtle materialism. They're believing that there is an ideal state, that the reflection in the mirror has somewhere to get to, has somewhere to somehow ascend and elevate, when really it's completely the opposite. One of the books I'm reading at the moment by, it's called Know Thyself, I'll put a reference to the name of the book in the blurb on this podcast. But ultimately, if we keep reminding ourselves that we can never know of God, we can never know of consciousness, then we relinquish the search as even being possible.
Mm.
And in that wisdom, insight, if you will, or waking up to, we cannot get to something that is beyond our finite mind, then somehow the finite mind loses its grip on these so-called objects, apparent experiences that we're having. We realize that we're no more than a flicker in the ocean, being held by the ocean that is constantly changing, a bit like a kaleidoscope. Can you imagine a kaleidoscope constantly changing, shape-shifting colors and patterns that make up the fabric of our finite experience? And the finite mind is very good at trying to explain eternity in a way that is limited. Time is a great example of that. Time has never happened. now we live in a series of moments of now. Mm-hmm. A past has never been experienced, and a future has never been experienced. But what the past and the future are the ways of the finite mind to charter eternity. It's the finite mind trying to interpret the uninterpretable. And in that, it shrouds itself in a belief system that's very, very compelling. But past, future have never, ever happened. Only a series of nows happen. And the more we see that, you know, the more curious and the more compelling our experience becomes. I certainly, for one, often are thinking about the future and what I might get or not get or achieve. And just having this conversation now and going deeper into that, it's all it is. When I look into the future, it's a misinterpretation of now. It's a misinterpretation of the past. And all we really need to do is be awake to that. There's nothing to be fixed, because there's no entity here to be fixed. There's no, the mirror, the so-called reflection in the mirror has no capacity to fix anything. That creates a duality, that creates two gods, it creates two consciousnesses. It says, well, okay, I need to somehow not do this anymore to get consciousness closer to me. No, it's impossible to get consciousness any closer than it is right now. However, we can be knowingly aware of the immediate space that we're in, that we can call awareness.
Yeah, and that's really important to remember when, you know, you're starting your non-dual journey and you come up with a situation where you're thinking or doing things which you have observed are not non-dual enough, and that's when it breaks down into duality again. That's when you split it up.
Yeah.
So it's really important to remember that, you know, like, what would your advice be for someone who is struggling in their practice and who maybe thinks that they're failing all the time and can't get it right because they're doing the wrong things or they're not doing the right things?
I first of all, just obviously be compassionate and gentle with your experience. It's so easy, and I've seen this before. If Sam Kataria, Jamie Goodwin think somehow they can go on a non-dual journey in order to get somewhere, then we are going to perpetuate the nature of coping. So first of all, if you've started this or you're involved with a group that facilitates this kind of exploration, look to your immediate experience, see whether or not the same things keep coming up for you. If the same things keep coming up for you, then the truth that is available in every moment hasn't landed. It's very easy to, also very easy to intellectualize non-duality as a, and again, there's nothing wrong with that. It has to the contrary, sometimes intellectualization or using philosophy to talk about non-duality is almost seen as, well, it's frowned upon because apparently you're not going deeper into that state and space of openness. Now, I would challenge that because states are also subtle objects. Yeah, intellectualization is a form of using object and logic to explore, but that process of, you know, when you look at the Vedantic line and you look at the, and in particular, it's a deep, vigorous exploration of experience and logic. Now, when that logic lands, then by itself, the arrow kind of fires itself, as sort of expression coined in the book Zen and the Art of Archery, that what we have is already realized. It's realized in a moment of realizing there's nothing to realize, and that's how subtle this exploration is. So be honest with yourself. Look to see whether or not you're trying to fix something, whether you're trying to reach somewhere. I think a lot of trainings and communities create a sense of progression, a sense of getting somewhere, that ultimately perpetuates the idea that our, you know, finite reflection flicker in the ocean can somehow figure out the depths of the ocean. It has to start by realizing that we have no independent nature. We have no independent nature in anything. Yes, you know, someone will challenge me and probably say, well, hang on a minute, we have free will. But free will arises and is experienced, but in essence, we don't have free will in true self. We have free will, yes, because it's experienced, but really pioneer that exploration and call out and investigate the nature of free will. I think that's such an important element to sort of let go of self-importance in our immediate now. And if you think about the mind body that is here and experienced, the billions of cellular processes and exchanges that are going on in our body, yet we somehow have the arrogance to believe that we have a free will thought that can somehow govern all of that. That there's this imaginary space in our minds that, by the way, scientists haven't found yet, is somehow steering an infinitely complex organism or entity.
Even group of organisms.
Group of organisms.
Culture, even.
Culture of organisms. So when you look back through history, this idea of self and a kind of superior thought, mind, free will, call it what you want, where we can somehow there's this sort of invisible ghost cherry picking different options. There's been no evidence of that, and obviously, you know, this is an exploration around logic and evidence in experience. I have not seen anything that supports that notion. Very important area to to investigate and explore as you begin non-duality, because again, starting a non-dual journey should be about curiosity and exploration without any rules.
Definitely. So also, because people who are exploring, a lot of people that I've met have been in a very vulnerable, open position, and that can sometimes lead people into, I myself as well, lead people into situations where it seems very alluring to place all the all the credit towards a thing or an organization in particular who can, you know, save you or help you save yourself or save the world or save something. And it'd be really good to explore a little bit about you know, protecting, being, you know, being open and being able to continue that exploration without it devolving down again into traps.
Okay, here's a good rule for everyone who's listening. If you're presented with a proposition from a organization that explores non-duality and they promise a relief from something, that they sell an ideal state of, wouldn't it be great to have perfect relationships, wouldn't it be great to not be anxious anymore, anything that sells an outcome is perpetuating the very thing that non-duality gets away from. So seek out the best, some of the ancient books and principles. Again, Vedanta is a pure line. Dzogchen as well.
Nyingma.
Yeah, I've not heard of that. Okay.
Mm.
Tell me about that later, Jamie.
It's up there with Dzogchen.
Okay.
Run the same lineages.
Amazing. Sufism.
Yeah, Sufism, definitely.
You got Rumi, who writes beautifully about non-dual exploration. So again, the key word is exploration. Explore with a curious, open mind. I know a friend of mine, she coins the phrase beginner's mind. Always go into things with a beginner's mind. Explore, be inquisitive, but never stray too far from discernment. Discernment is such a powerful word in non-dual exploration. And that's, if something doesn't add up logically around the non-dual core, which is no self and one, if things start to contradict that around doing things better, committing more, achieving particular states,
needing to give more of your resources,
anything that starts to say you as an individual have a role here to contribute to X, when that happens, then it becomes a materialistic pursuit, and it becomes very, very confusing because it's anti that. It's not, you could get away with saying, well, everything's welcomed in consciousness and everything's one anyway, but that's just too cheap. That's where, again, as I mentioned in this podcast, where individuals can intellectualize non-duality, they can say, oh, it's all awareness, it's all consciousness. Now, that hasn't really landed when you're trying to go deeper into dissolving, exploring, unraveling, walking back from the separate self to see that everything is within consciousness. But sometimes the separate self can appropriate a non-dual punchline, if you will, to make the separate self almost feel more powerful. And that's another thing to watch out for, because power and a sense of self-importance is a very easy slip within this exploration. And you see this happen all the time with those who want to pioneer and change the world and believe that they've got it, believe that they know what's best for other people, that, you know, are quite dogmatic in their approach. Really, certainly what I've found is in a non-dual exploration, you see everything within your experience as being intimate, ultimately to consciousness or wherever that experience is arising. You see it as an integral part of you or I. And those who believe that there is a particular way to do things naturally start to separate, naturally start to see a world that somehow needs to be rescued, naturally start to feel like they're wielding some kind of power to fix the world and themselves, when really it's perpetuating insecurity, separation, and a need to find self-worth in a separate world. And I think that religions through time that have been grounded in non-dual principles have become individualized in a way that this is the way we do things. And unfortunately, those who are successful in that pursuit can end up creating, wreaking havoc in the world, and just through having an insight of this power. Never ever appropriate any insight or power you get to your mind and body. Your mind body is nothing more than a passing transitory experience that is constantly changing. It's not a fixed entity. Experience does not happen to a mind body. A mind body is a facet of that experience arising from consciousness. The deep key principle when you explore non-duality is to know that experience do not arise from a mind body. The mind body is just another beautiful kaleidoscopic mishmash of experience that is always changing. Evidence of that, our bodies are always changing. Our experiences of our bodies are always changing. When we look in the mirror, we see different things. So, you know, the mind body is another passenger in consciousness. Consciousness does not arise from that passenger. And that really is a very, very easy misstep in a non-dual exploration.
Mm, definitely. And that is why, you know, this was definitely the case in my own exploration. The penny would drop, and there would be times where I'd be like, okay, yeah, now I've figured it out. This is it. This is how reality is. This is how the mind is. And that would lead me into tripping myself up, breaking down into another belief pattern, and, you know, things would start to go wrong because I was following that belief and enacting it in the world. And it was when I realized that the beliefs or the insights, they are also changing all the time. And I can never attach myself as an identity to a specific insight, nor the nature of reality. It is, like you said, Sam, these are just words that we're trying to use to describe something which is undescribable. We can't describe the infinite using limited dialogue, but what we can do is we can trigger the direct experience of it. And often I've seen that insights are just that, the triggering or even the smoke from the fire of realizing and knowing, and at the same time ingraspable and unable to know. And being comfortable with that really assisted me when I was just getting started.
Yeah, I think what you point to, the couple of quotes that jump out at me, is this idea that we're trying to touch a void. It's like a fertile void where everything arises and dissolves, arises and dissolves. Take a moment now, if you're listening, close your eyes and feel what you're feeling, hear what you're hearing, and see those sensations arise, as in they're felt and they're known, then watch them dissolve. just notice that movement. Notice that movement, that any felt experience never hangs around and always arises and dissolves back into that fertile void. Not from a mind-body. Investigate the direct experience of that mind-body now, and even see that arises and dissolves into source. And that exercise is really powerful because it's an immediate doorway into what is actually happening. And see, meditation is a component of a non-dual exploration, but meditation is not, again, a practice to get you anywhere. It's a contemplation of what is. It's a and Jamie and I are meditating now. We're talking about this stuff. We're noticing true nature. You know, I've got a coffee in my hand. You know, I don't need to be sat up a mountain doing this. You can do it in traffic if you want. Just know that it's a contemplation of what is available in every moment. So again, another great pointer for a non-dual exploration is, don't think that it needs to be dressed up in sacred rituals. You know, the moment now is sacred. You know, it's, as Rumi said, it's a gift from beyond the finite mind. And that's reassuring, because certainly what my early exploration in non-duality, and I'm like you guys out there, this is fresh, new to me. I'm not an expert. If I was an expert, then I'd be a con man. And I'm not. You can't be an expert in nothing. But you can certainly facilitate that exploration, as I've found. But the more I identify with that doesn't change, and I really like to end on this, if the more I relate to that doesn't change, which is my awareness of everything that's happening now, the more I don't mind the transitory nature, the more I become curious about that which doesn't change, because it's crazy. I mean, that's the thing that has stayed put since the day we were born, since every now we've ever actualized or experienced. The only thing that has ever been present is awareness. That's the only thing that's never ever changed. The rest has been a fleeting movie on a timeless screen. So obvious. I am sad, I am happy, I'm drinking some coffee, I'm looking at some trees. The one common denominator in all of that is I am. There is a light that is bringing all of these objects to life, and it cannot be known as a form. That's a miracle, and what a lovely thing to do, to be able to share this and talk about it, because it's always a fresh revelation to me.
Wonderful. Thanks for listening, everyone, and see you in the next episode.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning into my podcast channel for this episode. Hope to see and hear from you all soon.